Back on downtown, it's 4:30 on a Wednesday afternoon and time for this week's Sports Lit 101. Book that we've talked about a couple of times called The Dawn Patrol Diaries, Fly Fishing Journeys Under the Korean DMZ. We are happy to be joined by the author of the book, James Card. James, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is such a fascinating book, so we have to ask the obvious question. What led you to South Korea in the first place?
I was a college graduate with an itch to travel. I researched all kinds of work abroad opportunities. And in Asia, there's quite a few opportunities to teach English. Like many other college grads, I had student loans to pay off, so that was important. And I settled on South Korea.
One of the things, James, this is Bruce, that I found fascinating is that, but you didn't settle on just one thing. You got there. You taught in various kinds of situations, industrial situations, educational situations. You moved around, and you discovered about every inch of that country on your journeys to fish. And I think maybe you will probably know the geography of South Korea better than half the people in Seoul.
Yeah, it's true. Korea is very urbanized. And after the Korean War, a lot of people moved to the cities for work. And it's been like that ever since. The countryside is heavily depopulated. It's a super aging society in the rural areas. So when I would speak to urban Koreans about traveling around out in the mountains and stuff, they looked at me just with shock and surprise often. And yeah, you're right. I kind of knew a lot of the back roads and back country better than most.
Well, what's fascinating for me, I've been a fly fisherman for a really long time. What drew me to the book when I first saw the title is the late Lee Perkins from Orvis told me a story one time when we were fishing about fishing in Asia and how he was fishing in China for these trout that really took the hook and ran. And he said, but there are no laws over there. You can catch all the fish you want. He said they don't protect the streams. One of the problems that you discovered in South Korea is that was very much the same situation, that there were wonderful areas of habitat, but they were being bulldozed or exploited, there are really no game laws to speak of for fish anyway.
That's true. There are a couple, for the most part, there's no fishing licenses or regulations whatsoever. As for any type of angling restrictions, that would be maybe you might see a sign by a reservoir that's used for drinking water. It's like a keep out sign. And then there's a couple spots that are kind of protected in a national park or national monument type setting. And that's another like a keep out type restriction. But other than that, everything is just, it's open season. And there's no bag limits. So like the name suggests in the title, Dawn Patrol, I often felt like I would discover a trout stream, but then I would come back and like keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
Wondering if it's been fished out or it's been developed. And that's the other thing about environmental controls is that I've seen so many streams and rivers get excavated and bulldozed and rechanneled and cement poured and embanked and dammed. And that was shocking because here in the U.S., we're tearing down our dams. And we know the importance of rivers and how they should flow free. In Asia, it's pretty much the opposite.
You were there for 12 years, and you started out basically teaching and going fishing and meeting people. Then you started to work as a freelance journalist, telling your story. And then you become the first fly fishing guide in the country. And what I found fascinating about that was how you talked about how, yeah, you get some fat cat Americans on business trips and this and that, but the whole idea of a guide seemed completely foreign. And, you know, I think of guides all the time because I know a lot of them. And I wondered if that disconnect, the idea that you needed a guide, was that nobody in Korea was that interested in fishing, so it would only be from the outside.
True. My wife is Korean, And when my mother-in-law heard that I was guiding, she thought I was running some kind of weird scam. It was just such a foreign idea. Like, people pay you to take them fishing? And she just kind of shrugged her shoulders and, well, I guess I have this kind of different son-in-law. Over in Korea, there are some, like, kind of charter services, but that's mostly for ocean fishing, mm-hmm. where you need to hire a captain with a boat to take you out to some very remote, often little rocky islets where you can get after some bigger fish. And that's about it. But for inland fishing, not so much.
One of the most heartwarming stories in your book is the time you are out fishing in rural South Korea and you see a young boy trying to fish and he's not really knowing what he does. And you help him out and you actually give him some very good fishing equipment and you try to make sure that he's not going to get yelled at for stealing it. And you tell the story that the reason that young boy might be out in the country was because his parents didn't think he was suited for the city, or maybe he had some learning disabilities or something. And I thought about, that's one of the kindest acts I've ever read about in a fishing book. I mean, I get it, and I know where it's coming from. But if you could just relate a little bit of that for our listeners, I think it would really be great.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, I grew up fishing with my father, and all my buddies did mm-hmm. the same thing. And over in Korea, I very rarely saw any children out fishing. The stereotype is very true of Asian students studying for long hours. So they're obviously not going to have much time to go fishing. And especially when they're living in an urban area. So that was really kind of shocking to me. The only times I seen some kids fishing were it would be like a trip to the beach, and they'd bring some fishing rods and chuck a line out to maybe catch some ocean fish of some kind. So when I seen that kid, it was, and like I said, these rural areas are so vacant of young people that he was out of place. And so maybe there was some reasons for that. I mean, traditionally Koreans have, you know, sent off certain family members to go live with grandma and grandpa out in the country because of some problem or another. Maybe it's a broken home. So I seen the kid and he didn't know what he was doing. So I kind of helped him out and I gave him a bunch of fishing tackle. It was a good experience and I never seen him again. So I hope he put it to good use.
Oh, I'm sure he did. And one of the things that I also thought was fascinating is you understood some things after a while about Korean culture that I don't know everybody understands. I know that my nephew's wife is Korean, first generation American, and she always tells me they're very quarrelsome. They like to quarrel. They like to argue. I said, really? She says, oh yeah, just my whole extended family's like that. Then I said, but I have this also the sense that there's a certain kind of humility too. And she looked at me and said, some days maybe. And it seemed like you really got a grip on the way that a country that's that industrialized, that business oriented, comes to look at its environment. And I've never read another author who really, I thought, got that far in a different place.
Yeah. Well, there's, they can be quarrelsome. I mean, there's probably some YouTube clips of the Korean parliament getting into fist fights. That's a pretty regular occurrence. But also, I think as a national identity, South Korea has always had a kind of a chip on its shoulder because they're pinched between Japan and Russia to the north and China, and there they are on that peninsula, stuck between these superpowers, and so they have to, like, how should I say, get mentally strong in a national identity kind of way. So Quarrelsome. Oh, yeah. You get some of them drinking and partying late at night. You'll have stuff like that for sure. They're nicknamed the Irish of the East.
Right.
I've heard. Yeah. And that's kind of a fair stereotype. But I mean, then again, though, they're the best people to spend an evening with, eating and drinking and dining and talking.
One of the other things I really liked about the way you set this book up is that the reader learns about a new place or a new species of fish as you do. And I was struck by the pictures of some, like the cherry trout and the like. I like the fact that you took the time to take pictures of the fish. Most people I know take pictures of the trophy fish and that's it. But seeing these fish and learning about how rainbow trout have been, you know, pushed out all over the Far East, and to see that there're little pockets of things remaining. Are you optimistic or pessimistic that these native trout will have places to thrive 50 years from now?
That's pushing it. When I left the country, there was the Four Rivers Project being pushed by President Im Yong Bak. He's a former construction industry executive, and he started this nationwide project to restore the four major river systems, but it had nothing to do about river restoration. It was about channelizing and dredging them and building more dams and stuff like that. But then the project had mission creep with like a ratcheting effect where the project would extend into many, many tributaries. So it just kept going and going. And that's no good. And it's been a big disaster since then. I've kept up on the story from stateside. Sure, there'll be pockets tucked away deep in the mountains, and I hope they're there until the end of time. So that's the best I can hope for. Koreans do have a sense of environmentalism. They have protested big, large dam projects in the past, and the Four Rivers Project also received an enormous amount of public criticism. But what's really sneaky and insidious is the small stuff, and it's the little creeks and little rivers that are getting nailed under everybody's watch, and nobody thinks anything of it. And that's like the sad part.
Well, I hope that when you go back, you get to fish some. I know that you have mentioned that when you got back to Wisconsin, it just wasn't the same anymore. But I'm sure you go back to visit family from time to time. And I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. We talk about a book a lot. We talk about a lot of books on the show. And I told Rich, I said, man, I just love this one. I want to take the lead on this one, because as a fly fisherman and someone who likes to travel the world, This was really a fabulous read.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll get to talk to you again sometime.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's James Card, The Dawn Patrol Diaries, the book. It's Sports Lit 101. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Bruce talks with University of Maine hockey coach Ben Barr next on Downtown.
Hi, it's Loretta Swit, and you're listening to Downtown with Rich Campbell. Aren't you lucky?
What do I like about Joe Baldacci? Well, the man.